Blog Talk Radio.
What no? Nothing worse than being goatless. Good evening. Welcome to Erie House. I don't know, what are we calling it tonight? It's an oldie tiny radio night here at Erie House. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show here along with
Barry Binkley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and we're here along with, at least for a little bit,
and nobody here but us scarecrows. It is I, God the Ghoul, Blade Blade.
Happy Halloween week as we continue with our four-day marathon here at Erie House. We did some music on Thursday night, last night. We went to some parties tonight. It's a salute, once again, to Edgar Allan Poe.
Well, that, many more programs like this will be to come. It just, there's so much wonderful Poe out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're talking about a soundbite. That would have been a good place for a hee-haw.
Yeah,
and we're,
tonight we're going to be enjoying Vincent Price and Bela Lugosi in two of our episodes, and then one, A Cavalcade of America, with a little bit about Edgar Allan Poe.
Cavalcade of America is a lot of those talked about American history and such, and reenacted and things of that nature. So I'm looking forward to their take on Edgar Allan Poe.
And
come February, we'll have to get Mark DeWidziak back, who will be publishing on Valentine's Day a new Poe biography.
Be nice if Mark can come and visit once again. Always a blast. He's so knowledgeable.
Oh,
and
he is.
Willing to
and
share
tolerant.
What he knows.
And tolerant.
And tolerant of us. The rare beast. Yeah, maybe we'll even slip in a Poe poem or two or five or ten or something like that. Depends what we got time for in this lovely hour and a half that we've put aside for Edgar Allan Poe.
I do have to say, now that we're through that portion there, Dale, is that I received very many wonderful wishes from friends and such for the birthday today. And I even got two special audio birthday greetings. I have to share one of them with you right now. Here we go.
Okay.
I'm scared.
Come on, you can hit the play button.
A small red squirrel in a beech tree. I stare at...
Wrong button. This button.
I don't know. I'm curious about the beech tree.
Oh. Hey, Dave, how you doing? Al here. Listen, I know you're super busy. You got a lot going on. I really hate to bother you, but, well, there's something I've been meaning to tell you, and I'm afraid it just can't wait any longer.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Dave.
What, there's more?
But wait, there's one more.
I'm William Shatner. I've done a lot of things in my career, but this takes the cake. This is so cool. You, Dave, today, it's all about you. You were born a long, long, long time ago.
It makes me want to celebrate, makes me want to get up out of this chair, makes me want to sing, makes me want to dance, makes me want to shout.
kick my heels up, throw my hands up, toss my head back. No, really, people should be shouting your name in the street.
Come on now, sing.
Sing that song. Sing it out loud. I want to celebrate. Put it up in lights.
You're officially over the hill.
See, no one else deserves to be celebrated like you because you are the best.
I want you to know.
I want you to know.
I want you to know
right now you make me want to shout. That's right, you make me want to shout because there really is no doubt. You know what I'm talking about because you make me want to shout.
Yeah!
Yeah, boy!
Wow.
You make me want to.
Happy birthday, you thing from another world, you.
Oh, thank you.
There we go. That's all you get from me.
Those birthday messages are hideous.
Weird Al and William Shatner. What more can I ask for?
I don't know.
I've
got them, but it paled in comparison to those.
Yeah, you become famous. You have become famous.
Oh my!
Or infamous.
Well, I'm famous, just not anything like those two. My goodness! Wow.
Dave,
hey,
you're
that
famous.
Was the highlight of my day. Getting happy birthday to you from a Garzoo. That was my highlight of the day.
Uh-huh.
There you go.
And a bob horn, and a boinger.
Yep, and a bike horn and a boinger, absolutely.
And I got you three radio shows, so.
Yeah.
It's like it's your birthday or something, Dave.
Yeah.
Or something, yeah.
You caught up to me again, but I'm leaping ahead.
Yeah,
for a little while. Enjoy it while you can. I'll be old again. I'll be the oldest one in the room again.
Yeah, well, I think you just get to retire before I do. That's all.
I'm going to work like a drop, I'm afraid.
So we have some phone tonight,
Dave. A whole lot of radio. Let's start with a little bit of informational material from Cavalcade of America. And it's the story of Edgar Allan Poe.
1926, right?
Yeah. We're there about. No.
Good year for Cavalcade.
Isn't Cavalcade a toothpaste? Oh, wait, that's Colgate. Never mind, that's Colgate.
Yeah, let's see what we got for a date. How about Feb the 26th of 1941?
Wow, okay.
The Cavalcade of America, presented by DuPont, maker of better things for better living through chemistry. The Cavalcade of America brings you a drama inspired by the life of Edgar Allan Poe, the brooding genius whose stories and poems left an authentic American imprint upon the literature of the world. Our radio play was especially written by Norman Rostin, based on research on the life of Edgar Allan Poe by Victor Thaddeus. Our star is Carl Swenson of the Cavalcade Players. The orchestra and the original musical score are under the direction of Don Voorhees. DuPont, maker of better things for better living through chemistry, presents Carl Swenson as Edgar Allan Poe on The Cavalcade of America.
Listen to the rain and thunder. how cooling the rain is on the body, how quickly it freezes to the skin. Annabelle, my Anna, can you hear me where you lie sleeping under this endless earth, beneath the wet evening flowers? Or are you nothing at all now? The dust I breathe, the space between stars, this emptiness in my heart. If you're in the earth or air listening, you'll know why I'm here in the black night, why I must not return.
It was many and many a year ago, in a kingdom by the sea, that a maiden there lived whom you may know by the name of Annabel Lee.
Is my name printed that way, Annabel, in all the copies?
Well, I couldn't use the names of any other girls. The rhymes wouldn't work out.
I see, Mr. Edgar Allan Poe. I'm merely a rhyming coincidence.
Just think of the thousands of readers of my book reading your name aloud, breathlessly.
I don't care if you've sold none at all. I know what you've done and what you're going to do.
Yes, you do know. You should. You're in everything I write. You're the heartbeat in every line.
Here's Brown's bookstore.
Oh.
Shall we go in, sir, and see how your books are selling?
Good day, Mr. Brown. What's the report for today, good or bad?
Well, I sold another copy of your book of poems.
Good. Didn't I tell you, Anna? Each one adds up. How many this week all told?
One.
Last week?
Week before last week. One.
Well, I'm not a national figure, that's certain.
Someday they'll be buying your books just as fast as you write them, Edgar.
Oh, here comes the Milford Bard, and I imagine with his usual recitation.
Oh, how priceless is nature's gift in the spring. The beautiful colors on each little bird's wing.
You'd better save it for your newspaper, Bard.
Yeah, I'll make them up as I go along. My poem a day in the paper represents the flower of American literature. Who else you got? Now you take that young fellow Poe. Not a particle of genius.
Maybe Mr. Poe here can answer that criticism himself.
You're Edgar Allan Poe?
Exactly. Now, sir, I've been reading your daily poem for quite a time, and I want to compliment you.
That's mighty nice of you to say.
Yes, I want to compliment you on such a consistent output of trash.
You... Trash, sir?
Yes, I remember your gallant couplet of Tuesday last. Would that I were too a bird singing far above the herd.
Well, what
aside
you...
from the nobility of theme, I should say your bird and herd rhyme is positively immortal.
Hold on, son. I'll bet you $5 I can create more stanzas in 1 hour than you can.
Now, there is a fair test of talent. Will you lead off, sir?
Shall
I start you rolling? Dawn brings up in the morning sky its red and gold artillery. Carry on, O Bard of Milford.
Subject, dawn. Dawn.
Only two lines, Bard. Like this. While from the proud towers of the town, death looks gigantically down.
Gentlemen, do we have to read the rest of these manuscripts? I don't mind taking the first prize, but I won't miss my supper doing it.
There's only a few more, one by O'Connor, one by that chap Oliver, one by a fellow named Poe.
Let's all suddenly go home.
Gentlemen, let's agree to read a couple more, and if we're not satisfied, there'll be no prize awarded in our literary contest this year.
All right, let's continue with O'Connor.
Go ahead.
And as the villainous cur drew his knife, Mary clutched her heart in fear. Would he attempt to defile her honor? Slowly he advanced.
Oh, enough of that rot.
Who are you, young man? What do you want? Who let you in?
I came to find out about your story contest. My name is Paul.
I'm sorry, it's too late for entries. We're deciding the winner now.
Do you mind if I wait here?
No, it'll be all right if you'll sit down over there and not disturb us.
Thank you, sir.
Continue the reading, sir.
All right. We try this one, gentlemen. It's called Manuscript Found in a Bottle.
Well, the bottle part may prove interesting.
I doubt it.
Here, Mr. Lathrop, it's your turn to read one.
Oh, very well. And as we carry a crowd of canvas, the ship is at times lifted bodily from out of the sea. Oh, horror upon horror, the ice opens suddenly to the right and to the left, and we are whirling dizzily in immense concentric circles round and round the borders of a gigantic amphitheater, the summit of whose walls is lost in darkness and distance. The circles rapidly grow small. We are plunging madly within the grasp of the whirlpool, and amid a roaring and bellowing and thundering of ocean and tempest, the ship is quivering. Oh, God. And going down.
Who wrote that?
Well, let's see. Manuscript Found in a Bottle by Edgar Allan Poe.
Never heard of him, but he gets my vote and mine.
I agree, gentlemen. We'll notify Mr. Poe first thing tomorrow and award him the $50 prize.
One moment, gentlemen.
Yes, what is it you want, young man? What is it?
Well, I'll take the prize now. I'm Edgar Allan Poe.
Edgar, you mustn't stare at me so. The other dancers are watching us.
Fine. Let them watch. Some of the most blue-blooded and black-hearted people of the state are watching us dance.
How did we ever get an invitation?
Edgar Allan Poe, my dear Anna, is becoming a literary figure. He's a subject for gossip. He's been known to frighten little children on the street merely by his ghostly presence.
Edgar, no.
And right now, they're listening to us laugh. What devilish scheme has he in store for that lovely girl, they're saying.
What devilish scheme have you in store, sir?
Oh, shall we say a journey to the bottom of the sea, perhaps? Or a visit to the interior of a star?
Is that all?
Tonight it's more than a star. It's a universe. I want to marry you, Anne, and keep you with me forever.
Forever is not a safe word for me. It's not a word to come true. Edgar, I'm ill.
Oh, Anna. Come, we'll sit down. Don't worry, darling. I'll take you to the land of green fields, and you'll heal inside. And I'll work. Work as never before for both of us. Oh, come with me, Anna. I'll guard you against winter. Perhaps I can give you wings to fly again.
Make it clear to you, Poe, but I can't use this story in my magazine. It's hardly the type we want.
Well, I'm not a writer of types.
Well, that's beside the point.
The point is, and politely, that since I've joined your magazine, circulation has jumped by thousands.
Yes, I know that's all very true, but if we're to hold our readers, we've got to give them something different. Those stories of yours are just a little too
insane. Is that the word? I've heard it said.
We need variety. Something light, romantic.
Is that all, Mr. Graham?
We'd like to have another story in time for the press.
A different type, is that it?
Confound it, Poe. I wish you could be practical. We are selling a commodity, and we know when the people want a change of food.
I am not a feeder of populations.
Well, I am. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, you do, Mr. Graham, and it's time somebody made it clear that American literature will not be made to order, is not a commodity, and will not be written out of the frills and fashions of your time. Yes, and there's one word more. Goodbye.
What's the matter?
Commodity, eh? Write it to order. Feed the public. They know what ought to be written. Let them tell you.
What are you saying, Edgar?
Anything rather than be a spigot to turn on for their thirst.
Here. Sit down beside me, dear.
Oh, forgive me, Anna. Oh, Anna. Anna.
It's all right. It happens, and that's all. Now you have your new poem to finish. Finish your raven quickly before he flies away.
No, you're cold.
You should have a large blanket of wool.
I let Caliban sit on top of me. She's very warm.
Just as soon as spring is here, we'll take a trip, Anna.
Spring. That's when God comes back and paints everything in green like toys. And birds come back so mysteriously from their distant Egypt. And flowers from their warming earth. Everything that once died comes back again, Edgar. Would I come back in some later spring?
Yes, Anna.
And if I don't, you'll come to me.
Yes, my child, I will.
Caliban is so fortunate. She has 8 additional lives. How jealous I am of you, Caliban.
I'll have you out of this miserable place soon, darling. There's going to be another contest in the Saturday Visitor. I'll enter it, and with the prize money, we'll go away.
Yes, Edgar.
Or if not, why not a public appeal? A public subscription? I have it. Pennies for Poe. That's good.
Edgar, please.
Is this the residence of Mr. Poe, the famous writer?
It is.
In behalf of the Female Literary Club, may we ask you a few questions? You see, we're going to discuss you tonight.
And we thought we'd just drop in for a word.
Yes.
Well, Mr. Poe, just how do you write? Just how?
Exactly what do you do?
I sit at my desk, madam. It's very simple. You must try it yourself someday.
Really? Well, that is a charming point. Mm. Yes.
How do you account, Mr. Poe, for the, how shall I put it, your wonderful somber qualities?
That's because, madam, I love to joke. I'm always joking.
How very quaint. We must remember to mention it.
Yes, yes. And mention, too, that Mr. Poe invites all of your membership to observe him at his desk as he writes endlessly without food. And tell them that unless his various friends and admirers, as you both are, assist him in his hour of need, he'll be unable to complete his new poem, entitled The Raven, as he quite naturally must be kept alive in order to complete it. You'll mention these points for which I thank you. Good night. We'll cut the heart piece by piece and sell it. And we next weigh out the blood, drop by drop, for what it'll bring. The movement to save Poe has begun.
My darling, you mustn't feel badly. You needn't for me.
Oh, Anna. See how I've dragged you down. I've taken you to the very edge of death. And I'm frightened for the first time.
Edgar, don't be frightened. You must sleep. You must not open the wounds you've received. Come, sleep. Put your face in the hollow of my throat. Sleep. Rest. My poor, proud boy. Sleep. Always come to me, wherever I am, in whatever world. Sleep.
Seems like some of the best writers had pretty tortured lives, like Edgar Allan Poe.
Well, even his poetry, much of that was torture, you know?
Yes. Does a tortured soul.
Makes you wonder how Stephen King keeps going, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, like, I was thinking of Robert E. Howard, the creator of Conan the Barbarian. He had a very, very bad life and very underappreciated, underpaid while he was alive.
Yeah, so many writers are certainly underpaid, if not underappreciated, while they're alive.
Yep. But it's what we do. It's what they do.
It is. What we do with what they do, but we have more fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Now, you did you either of you gentlemen read a lot of Poe as youths?
I didn't read a lot, but, you know, fortunately for me, a lot of Poe was put onto LPs. So I did get to listen to Poe.
How about you, Gar? Is he still with us? I don't know. He's getting prepared for his show. He's probably in and out. There he is. He's in.
Oh, he found that mute button.
I did. Blah, blah. From what I heard over the all the things I got going on, very intriguing tale there.
Yeah.
So, did you catch a lot of Poe when you were younger, Gar?
Oh, I did. I hung out in the library, elementary, middle school, all that, and Poe was Poe and Hitchcock were.
Sorry.
What? Was there a double entendre? I hung out at the library. Did I say airport? What did I? What?
I
don't
what?
Elementary. Want to know if you were
library,
hanging around
yeah.
the? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
You're fine. You're fine.
Okay.
Keep
okay.
going. Ignore the man behind
so,
the curtain.
Yes, I thoroughly enjoyed the Edgar Allan Poe and Alfred Hitchcock tales. They had them published in hardbound. Alfred Hitchcock.
Many stories from his mystery magazine got put into hardback. You're right.
It was great, and I enjoyed reading them. And Poe. And one of the best things about Poe is his poem called The Bells, because he uses the word tintinnabulation, and it's a great word.
It is. I think I'm going to practice it.
Tintinnabulation of the bells.
Has that ever been a Gar's word of the week?
No, this week's word of the week has something to do with Alfred E. Newman and the inability to think.
No, I said, have you ever had it as a word of the week?
I don't remember.
You should.
I should. It's one of my favorite words.
Tintinnabulations.
Tintinnabulations.
Well, that's one poem I ain't reading. I can trip over my tongue saying tintinnabulation. Let's get rolling. We've got a lot of
radio.
Let's hear the conclusion of Cavalcade of America and find out more about Edgar Allan Poe.
I'm back on mute. Blay, blay.
Oh, yeah.
I slept that night with your words singing in my heart. And when I awoke that morning, I resolved to leave the house and try to sell my poem, The Raven. I remember turning at the door, watching you asleep, so silently asleep and motionless. I thought then how peaceful she looked. How delicate a prize for death. How dazzling among angels. Quietly I closed the door so as not to waken you. Or were you past awakening then?
Oh, it's you, Poe. You have a way of coming in without being announced.
I have a new poem. I want you to read it. I want you to buy it and print it immediately.
Well, sit down. Sit down. Relax. How about a drink first?
A drink? Yes. A very small drink would do.
Yes. Suppose you give the toast.
Here's to a better market for poetry and prose, and all things that do not live as flesh does.
Now that's a toast can stretch for three drinks. that was good. Well, let's take a look at this poem. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, distinctly I remember, it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost on the floor.
You skipped four lines there.
Yes, just getting the idea, sort of. I see you're still dealing in ghosts and goblins.
You skipped four lines. And I'm not a traitor. I don't deal in anything. Do you hear me?
Well, I do, Poe. I can't use this stuff. Sorry.
It's an experiment in sound. That's never been done before. Can't you understand?
Not at first glance.
My work is not to be glanced at. It's to be read, every line of it. Now read it out loud, every line.
Get out of here, Poe.
I command you to print it.
If it's money you want...
Money? I live on air. I breathe promises. You cannot feed pigeons, so... Will you print the poem? Let your staff hold on it. I'll read it to them now. Yes, we'll have a reading before the clerks and compositors and all the learned men. Don't try to stop me, Glenn.
Hold on, Poe.
Gentlemen! Gentlemen, I beg your attention. Dream to these thoughts for a moment. Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there, wondering, fearing.
You're drunk. Ah, shut up. Give him a chance.
Doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore. This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, Lenore. Merely this, and nothing more. Shall I read more?
Throw him out, Taylor.
Is it clear? Is the music in it loud enough? Are they buying internal rhymes this year? Is it like another stanza, the last, perhaps?
All right. Everybody back to work. That's enough, Poe. Why don't you go home? You're ill. Here. Here's $15.
$15? I'll take it. I consider it a fair price for one stanza of the Raven. Here it is. I'll tear it off from the page. You can buy additional stanzas at $15 each. There are about a dozen more stanzas, gentlemen. But they're especially priced for seasonal reduction. I urge you to buy soon. Place your order and you shall have it sealed and delivered in my own hand. Must the king kneel? The king will kneel. Say what the king must do, and he'll do it!
Shop. I'm sorry, my friend. I dropped by with some things. I thought you might need them. Here's a blanket for your wife.
Blanket? For Anna? But she's covered with a long green robe now. Forever and ever. Listen to the bells. They're ringing for Anna.
Bells?
Haven't you heard? Everyone knows it. They're publishing a special edition of her death.
Edgar, take hold of yourself.
Now listen. You can hear her voice. She's calling me. She's asking me to come to her now. She's alone there in the night.
Edgar, where are you going?
Listen to the rain. The angels are weeping for her. Now I must go and keep the rain from her face. There's no time to lose.
Edgar, don't go out there. You're ill. Edgar! Come back!
I'm coming to meet you, Anna.
I cannot go any further. The rain and cold will put me to sleep quietly. There's a sound of a far ocean in my ears. The stars are turning in the sky beyond those clouds, and the moon somewhere is burning. Listen to the wind. You are whispering my name. And now I can see you through the mist. You're here to welcome me in my first night of death. Your voice, I hear it. Annabelle. My Anna. Can you hear me where you lie beneath the wet evening flowers? Under this endless earth?
Cavalcade of America thanks Carl Swenson and the Cavalcade Players for their performance of the story of Edgar Allan Poe, America's first great literary genius. And now DuPont brings you news of chemistry at work in our world. The story of man's progress is the story of the daily bread we eat. Man, the roaming hunter, could not pause to build, to rest, to learn. It was when he planted seeds, when the bright green blades sprang up from the dark fields, that man the vagrant became man the planner. Tents gave way to houses. Savage vengeance gave way to law. Superstition gave way to knowledge. Civilization came to the wild earth. Man became man, thanks to bread. Nothing worthwhile comes easy. Man learned to grow grain, to thresh it and grind it, to leaven and bake it into bread. But it was not easy. In the fields, birds attacked the green blades, and hordes of insects. Sometimes the golden stalks smutted, and the wheat, once milled to flour, became a temptation to other of man's natural enemies. It was a wonderful new food, but not only man wanted it. Man had learned to bake bread. But it almost seemed that nature meant to steal it away from him again. Along with the struggle for bread came the struggle to keep it safe. But in a sense, bread itself taught us to safeguard bread. For with the cities that arrived when man the nomad stopped wandering to plant his grain and harvest it, there came schools, knowledge, science. And science said, first the fields. Food for the fields that they may renew their strength. Then chemicals to kill weeds that strength may be conserved. And the seed, chemicals to keep it wholesome and stout against disease, to keep it healthy and multiply its yield. Then the smiling grain reaped from the field, a golden river curving into golden sacks. And the grain milled into flour, protection there too to keep the flour sweet and clean. And last, the bakery, turning the flour into bread. Further protection. Learning from nature, DuPont chemists made a wholesome ingredient present in many foods. This new ingredient, a propionate salt trademarked Mycoban, is now baked into bread to retard the growth of destructive spores of mold. And last of all, there is cellophane cellulose film to keep the loaf clean and fresh until it reaches your home. From the far-off wheat field to your table, chemistry watches the way of bread, so that you and your family may safely enjoy it, so that never shall there be famine over the face of the land. This is the responsibility of the chemist who brings us better things for better living through chemistry.
Our bread has better chemicals.
I'll drink to that.
Our bread has better chemicals. That's...
Next week, the Cavalcade of America presents the distinguished American actor, Henry Hull. Our play, Voice in the Wilderness, is the story of William Penn and the founding of Pennsylvania, an exciting chapter in American colonization left to us by this man of peace.
Yeah, it's just people from West Virginia who got
Henry
lost
Hull
trying to find
and
Ohio.
William Penn on the Cavalcade of America next week.
More of them chemicals.
That's how they found Pennsylvania.
I'm sorry.
Supporting Carl Swenson as Edgar Allan Poe were the Cavalcade Players. Anna was played by Charita Bauer, Bard by John McIntyre, Graham by William Johnstone, Mrs. Jones by Agnes Moorhead, Mrs. Smith by Jeanette Nolan, and Latrobe by Edwin Jerome. On the Cavalcade of America, your announcer is Clayton Collier, sending best wishes from DuPont.
Hey, how about that? Little Agnes Moorhead, what do you know about that?
Yeah, she was a regular on
this. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Well, thanks for sharing that.
Ding, dong, ding, dong.
Yeah.
Ding, dong, dong. Ding, dong, dong.
There it is.
There it is.
There it is.
That's the part that you didn't get to hear.
And once again, I failed to give Gar a heads up on what we're playing tonight. At least I think I did. So I'm assuming there is no moral.
No, I'm not even here, really. Blah, blah, blah.
Oh,
what are we doing?
That's true. You're invisible. I forgot.
Yes, I'm.
He's invisible.
I'm invisible. Yeah. So Better Living Through Chemistry, brought to you by your local meth dealer.
Yes.
My goodness.
I thought it was through your local Wonder Bread company.
Yeah, that too.
Who helps to build bodies in seven important ways.
That's right.
I like how they changed it from bringing grains to your table to we'll just replace with chemicals.
Yeah, first we're going to wrap your bread in cellophane or celluloid.
No,
or
they actually, first we have chemicals to kill the bugs. Then we have chemicals to replace the seeds that you think you're eating. And it's like, what? Wait, what?
Yes.
I missed something. That was weird.
Yeah. I miss having real food. All right.
Yeah, right.
I think we got time. Let's do, let's do a quick reading here, shall we?
Go
for
it.
Let's do that. Yes.
I'm hitting the mute button. I will see you on the other side.
All right. Take this kiss upon the brow, and in parting from you now, thus much let me avow. You are not wrong who deem that my days have been a dream. Yet if hope has flown away in a night or in a day, in a vision or in none, is it therefore the less gone? All that we see or seem is but a dream within a dream. I stand amid the roar of a surf-tormented shore, and I hold within my hand grains of the golden sand. How few, yet how they creep through my fingers to the deep, while I weep, while I weep. Oh God, can I not grasp them with a tighter clasp? Oh God, can I not save one from the pitiless wave? Is all that we see or seem but a dream within a dream? Yeah, I'll tell you, that guy was a little out there to write this kind of stuff.
He was.
But Edgar Allan Poe. Next up.
In a sense, I'm just thinking, I guess I didn't have a complete thought there. I was thinking that, but I was looking for an example in my head, and my head did not have an example, so I'm not going to go there.
Okay.
How about Lugosi doing a little bit?
I thought we'd wrap up with the best. Let's do Pit and the Pendulum, and then we can wrap it up with a short read by Bela Lugosi as we hurry up and get into the Pit and the Pendulum from Suspense.
Suspense. And the producer of radio's outstanding theater of thrills, the master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
In a niche all his own, apart from other great tellers of tales of terror, stands the moody, dark, and devious genius, Edgar Allan Poe. Obscure and ambiguous, the rolling periods of his prose are not for the casual reader, no more than for the casual listener. But for sheer suspense compounded of horror piled upon horror, literature offers nothing more awful than the Pit and the Pendulum. The terror of the Black Pit would have sufficed a lesser imagination, but to this, the macabre intellect of Poe added the inescapable doom of the razor-sharp pendulum, and then piled on the rats and the moving walls of red-hot iron until the edge of the unbearable is reached. Can you take it? Can you listen through the next half hour? Try. Try to listen to Mr. Vincent Price, starring in The Pit and the Pendulum, which begins in exactly 1 minute.
This is Bob Wright with the answer to the greatest challenge in cigarette history. The challenge was,
can a cigarette be made that will give decidedly better filtration and also give easy draw with full, natural tobacco flavor?
The answer is Kent. Kent with a revolutionary new Micronite filter that gives Kent decidedly better filtration, definitely less tars and nicotine than any other leading filter brand.
Kent filters best.
The answer is Kent, with the full, rich flavor of the world's premium quality natural tobaccos and an easy draw. Yes, of all leading filter brands, Kent filters best.
Kent filters best.
Tomorrow, pick up a pack of Kents with a revolutionary new Micronite filter and enjoy the most important advance in the progress of filter smoking.
Kent filters best.
And now, Mr. Vincent Price stars in Edgar Allan Poe's immortal story of punishment by terror, The Pit and the Pendulum, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I was sick unto death with that long agony, and when at length they unbound me and I was permitted to sit, I felt that my senses were leaving me. The sound of the inquisitorial voices seemed merged in one dreamy, indeterminate hum from which emerged the syllables of my name.
Captain Jean d'Albret.
Good fathers, gentlemen.
We hear you, my son.
Even now I have no knowledge of where I am or to whom I may be speaking.
You're speaking to me, my son. I am Fra Pedro d'Espia, Prior of the Dominicans of Segovia, and Grand Inquisitor for all Spain.
This, then, is the court of the Inquisition?
It is.
But I am a French officer.
That is true. A soldier and creature of the archfiend, the Antichrist, Napoleon Bonaparte, who even now is at the gates of Madrid, while his General LaSalle menaces our city of Toledo itself.
Nonetheless, I am a prisoner of war. By what right do you try me in this court?
Let the clerk read the charges against the prisoner. Item, that on the 4th day of September, in the year of our Lord, 1808, the said Captain Jean d'Albret did wed and espouse that most noble lady, the Doña Beatriz Valdez, niece and ward of the illustrious... One moment. Excellency? This marriage was a deplorable thing, if you like, but lawful marriage, however regrettable in a case like this, is no sin nor crime. There are other matters in the indictment. Then continue, but give us nothing that is not material. Item, that on the 12th of October, 1808, the said Jean d'Albret, being in command of a battery of light artillery, did direct the fire of his guns against the Holy Church of Santa Marta the Innocent, and thereby, of his wicked malice, destroyed that church utterly. Captain Delbray, is this charge true?
Yes.
You admit it.
Good Father, the church blew up, did it not?
Would you boast of your sin, young man?
It blew up because it was stored with kegs of gunpowder for your army. I had every right to fire on it.
And that is all the defense you have to make?
I tell you, I had every right to fire on it by military law.
Is military law above God's law?
I don't know. I did my duty.
Long live the Emperor! Captain Delbray, mark what I say. No man, however great his heresy, is condemned to be burnt in the fire if he first recant and acknowledge the error of his ways. Do you so?
I cannot. I was under orders. I obeyed them.
Then, Jean Delbray, there can be no mercy, no pity, since there is no atonement. The sentence of this court, therefore, is...
I have swooned in terror, yet I will not say that all of consciousness was lost in the deepest slumber, no, in delirium, no, in a swoon, no, in death, no. Even in the grave, all is not lost, else there is no immortality for man.
In a moment, we continue with the second act of Suspense. But first, some big news.
Longbow, new Pontiac is here!
With the Pontiac front seat that lets you in the back seat,
Pontiac automatically moves up and back just like that. Automatically. A portable radio that pulls right out and plays all alone. When you plug it back in, it's a car radio, high fidelity too.
What a nice tone.
Set your speed on the new speedometer, automatically.
If you go too fast, a buzzer goes buzz,
automatically. More good reasons you love the bold new Pontiac. Pontiac automatically.
The bold new Pontiac is here.
And now, Mr. Vincent Price in The Pit and the Pendulum by Edgar Allan Poe. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
No, even in the grave, all is not lost. There were shadows of memory which told me indistinctly of tall figures that lifted me and bore me in silence down, down, still down, until a hideous dizziness oppressed me at that descent into the earth. There was a vague horror at my heart because of that heart's unnatural stillness. Then, as consciousness swam back to my wits again, darkness, damp stone floor in darkness. Oh, Beatrice, oh, my wife.
Did you call me, Jean?
Beatrice, you here in the dungeons of the Inquisition?
No, my poor Jean. I am only here in your imagination.
Am I mad, then?
No. But your brain is fevered. You only think you hear me.
I hear you clearly. You won't leave me.
As long as I am in your heart, I shall be here. Have they chained you to the wall?
No. No, they've taken away my uniform. They've given me sandals and a robe of rough cloth. But I'm unchained. Beatrice, suppose they have buried me alive.
Have courage, Jean. You must have courage.
Then tell me where you are now, Beatrice, in the flesh, I mean.
In the old house by the olive grove, scorned of my people.
Yes, yes, I know.
Each morning I climb to the hilltop and watch for them.
Yes,
Sometimes I think I hear gun wheels rumble in the hills and long moving columns with the red dust rising above them.
Go on, go on.
First come the heavy cavalry in plume-crested helmets, on their flanks wheeling like hawks, light hussars in blue and scarlet. And behind them in a glitter of bayonets, as vast as light points on the sea, rank upon rank, the long gray coats and tall bearskin caps.
The old guard and the grand army.
It's only a vision, my dear one. They do not come.
Will they ever come, Beatrice?
I cannot tell.
Then I must face what has been prepared for me.
Can you stand up, Jean?
I think so.
Then walk. Yes. Walk as far as you can. Measure the limits of the cell, if this is not a tomb.
I'll try, Beatrice. I'll try. This robe impedes me, and the floor is treacherous with slime, but I'll try.
Look out! Jean!
Oh. I'm all right. I fell on my face. The robe tripped me. But...
what, Jean?
But my hand is in front of me, lower than my face, but I feel nothing.
Nothing, Jean.
It's a pit. A deep circular pit, and I fell on the very edge of it.
They would have had you walk into it.
Yes.
But you didn't. You're saved, Jean.
Saved, Beatrice. Saved. My torture has been merely postponed. At last, a deep sleep fell upon me, a sleep like that of death. How long it lasted, I know not. But when I opened my eyes once again, I could see. Yes, see. My prison was large and lofty, its walls formed of massive iron plates. A wild, sulphurous luster, I could not trace its origin, lit up the dungeon and the circular pit. I could see, but I could not move. I lay on my back on a low framework of wood, securely bound by a long fastening resembling a surgical bandage. The bandage passed round and round my body, leaving at liberty only my head and my left arm. With much exertion, I could supply myself with food from an earthen dish on the floor beside me. It was meat, highly seasoned, and there was no water. Beatrice, where are you?
I am here, Jean.
Your voice sounds stronger, and I can see you.
You are weaker, my dear, and more fevered.
Look, Beatrice.
Where?
At the ceiling of this room, 30, 40 feet up. What do you see?
I see, painted on the ceiling, a figure of Father Time.
Yes, but this Father Time carries no scythe. He carries instead what looks like a gigantic pendulum from an ancient clock. And the pendulum is moving.
A painting cannot move.
But I swear the pendulum did. It swung a little back and forth, just like a real pendulum. Beatrice, take care.
Take care of what?
Take care of the rats. The rats from the pit. They're swarming out in dozens. You can see their eyes glitter. What do they want? What do they want?
They have caught the scent of the meat in the dish beside
you. They'll not get it. Go! Go away, you vermin!
Au revoir, Jean. Au revoir.
Beatrice, where are you going? I can hardly hear you.
You are sending me away,
I'm
Jean.
Sending you away.
My poor loved one. You can't bear to see the rats running about my feet, can you? Even when you know I'm not here.
Beatrice.
It is true, Jean. You are sending me away.
Yes, it's true. In a cell swarming with vermin, there are others I would rather see here. I would rather see.
Did you call me, Captain D'Albret? Then in spirit, I am here.
Go. I command you, Fra Antonio. Go!
Not until I have first told you what is in store for you.
Which is?
Listen. Do you hear anything?
Yes, I hear something.
Turn your eyes upward. Look at the ceiling.
The pendulum.
Aye, the pendulum.
It is descended.
Only a foot or so as yet. As you notice, it is not really a pendulum.
No?
No. Its underside is a crescent formed of razor-sharp steel.
You mean...
A ponderous weight, Captain Dalbrey. Its movement is slow now, but soon it will take on momentum. It will swing wider and wider, and with each broad movement, it will creep a trifle lower.
Steel is directly over me.
Yes, above the region of your heart.
How long before?
You need have no immediate fear. It will not be too soon.
But how soon?
Who can tell?
Who can tell?
I can't. Yep.
And Vincent Price also played in the Pendulum in a Corman film.
Yeah, and that was closer to a lot of the Poe than a lot of the Corman films were.
Yes, so back in 1961, and I think he played one of the Inquisitors, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
he got tied up with Peter Lorre and Boris Karloff and Basil Rathbone, even in those Corman
films.
Yeah. Yeah, he always said he remembered those times fondly with those guys. They were all aging. And
yeah.
I'd love to be a fly on the wall for that. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
There's some fun behind the scenes.
There's only one problem with being a fly on the wall. Fly swatter.
Fly swatter.
Big problem.
Yes.
Big problem, yeah.
Flattening you against the wall, yes. That's always a problem.
Well, then again, Vincent Price was in the fly. So there you go.
There you go. Everything's full circle. Must have been in Ohio. Near Cleveland, I'm sure. Because
near
all
Cleveland.
Roads. All roads.
Lead from Cleveland. Yep. Lead from Ohio. Yep.
Sometimes it goes right from Rome to Cleveland, too. It's a long walk, but you can go. Yeah.
Reminds me, what's an episode of the British group, the Goonies, and they had a TV show. It was about the same time as Monty Python first emerged onto PBS, I think it was. Anyway,
yes, it was.
One time he says, yes, and we went to all roads that lead to Rome, and they went to a sign, like a MASH signpost, pointing all differently in every direction, said Rome. It was
yes.
That's absolutely hilarious.
Those were the days when you got your good British shows from PBS.
Yeah. Now you get constant begging for money on PBS. So.
Yeah. Marty Feldman used to have a show on PBS right around that time as well.
During this time of year on the PBS years ago, Louis Jordan was Dracula on PBS.
Well, I'll be there. Yeah.
It's a really good film. I think I've run it once or twice.
Wow, and they showed that on PBS, huh?
Yes. On Halloween night.
Ooh.
Even better. Well, it's Halloween weekend here. Let's wrap up The Pit and The Pendulum. Starring Vincent Price from Suspense.
And Ernest Borgnine.
Minutes, hours, days. Who can say how long it was? It might have been many days before that hideous blade swept so closely as to fan me with its acrid breath. Down. Still unceasingly, still inevitably down, the sharp steel flashed past within 3 inches of my chest, and then, only then, Beatrice.
I hear you calling, Jean. I am here.
Oh, Beatrice.
Is there no hope, my dear?
How can there be? 10, 12 more vibrations and it will fray the threads of my robe, only lightly as a razor in a delicate hand. There will be many sweeps down before it bites deep.
I can't escape it, and yet...
And yet...
And yet, if only I could use my wits...
You kept me away from you, Jean. You locked me out of your thoughts. If I am here only in your thoughts, why should I fear the rats?
The rats? The rats? Do they still swarm here?
Across the floor and over the meat platter. Yes. They have taken nearly all your food.
Yes, they are ravenous. They have sharp teeth. The meat is oily and spiced. If I take what remains of it... Scatter, you vermin! Rub that meat on the bandages that hold me here.
Tired, Jean, tired.
It may be too late. If I move my body of a fraction of an inch up, I...
Tired, I tell you, tired.
Can I stand those rats crawling across me? Can the flesh bear it?
Oh, one of them has leaped on the wooden framework. Yes. Another follows. They are gnawing at the bandage.
7, 8 more sweeps of the pendulum.
Does the bandage give way? Like still,
Jean, like still. 10, 12 rats now. Is death, I wonder, worse than this disgust?
A dozen sharp knives could do no better. The bandage has loosened to a ribbon. If you move sideways, yes, carefully, and drop to the floor.
Beatrice, I can't move. My arms and legs are numb. There is no
Just
power
feel
to...
feel and braid your robe. A minute more will be too late. Try.
Then with all the strength that is in me and the hatred I bear my enemies... I'm free.
See, Jean, the pendulum stops. They are drawing it back up through the roof.
Each move I make is watched. You never doubted that?
No. Yet with all they could do to you, they have failed twice.
They will not fail a third time, my dear. Listen.
What do you hear?
A groaning. A grinding as of metal.
It is only the cogwheels of the pendulum.
I think not, Beatrice.
Why not?
It seems to come from behind these iron-plated walls. It seems to shake the dungeon as a mill wheel might shake it.
Stand up, my Pujon. Get up off your
knees. I can't endure anymore. Don't you sense even now the odor of the heated iron?
Heated iron?
Yes, the walls are beginning to glow red. Oh, Beatrice, I have been much humbled. But I won't have you see me in tears. I order you to go.
Jean, in the name of
heaven.
Yes,
in the name of heaven, go.
In just a moment, we continue with the third act of Suspense.
More families, far more families, use Ex-Lax than any other laxative. Ex-Lax is the preferred laxative for one important reason. Ex-Lax helps you toward your normal regularity, gently, overnight. Today, many doctors recommend trusted Ex-Lax for youngsters as well as grown-ups.
That's because Ex-Lax gives you the relief you want, the gentle way that nature wants, without upset. When you take chocolated Ex-Lax at night, it does not disturb your sleep. And Ex-Lax is so effective that the next morning you'll be well on your way toward your normal regularity. Seldom, if ever, will you need Ex-Lax the next day.
Little wonder that of all the laxatives made today, tablet, powder, or liquid, Ex-Lax is the most popular. Next time, any time that you or any member of your family needs a laxative, make that laxative pleasant-tasting chocolated Ex-Lax. Introductory size, only 15 cents.
And now... Act 3 of The Pit and the Pendulum, starring Mr. Vincent Price. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
A suffocating heat pervaded the prison. I could draw no breath of air into my lungs. Against the loom of that fiery destruction, the thought of the pit and its coolness came like balm.
Does the pit please you, Captain d'Albret?
You again?
Do you find its contents pleasing?
Not the pit.
And how shall you avoid it? Look!
This dungeon has changed its shape.
That is true. The walls are closing in. It was formerly a square, and now
it is flattening slowly towards the center to force me into the pit.
Of course.
It will force you along with me.
Again, apparently, you must be told, Captain d'Albret, that you are speaking only to your own sick fancy. I am not here at all. Farewell.
Now, flat. flatter and flatter grew the red-hot walls. I shrank back, but the closing walls pressed me relentlessly onward toward the loathsome pit. At length, for my seared and writhing body, there was no longer an inch of foothold. I screamed once. I tottered on the edge of the pit. I averted my eyes. Then there was a discordant hum of human voices, and then a loud blast of many trumpets. The fiery walls rushed back. An outstretched arm caught my own as I fell fainting into the abyss. It was that of General LaSalle. The French army had entered Toledo. The Spanish Inquisition was in the hands of its enemy.
Suspense, in which Mr. Vincent Price starred in William N. Robeson's production of The Pit and the Pendulum by Edgar Allan Poe, adapted for Suspense by John Dixon Carr. In a moment, the names of tonight's supporting players and a word about next week's story of Suspense.
Here's good news for everyone who appreciates fine music. Heinz Soups offer you the LP record bargain of the year. The best of 57 in classical music by famous RCA Victor. It's a genuine Red Seal LP of $3.98 quality. Yet it costs you just $1 in cash and four labels from any of Heinz condensed soups. That's right, just a $1 bill and four Heinz soup labels. Think of it, 43 minutes of the world's great music. Highlights from eight RCA Victor albums, performed by famous orchestras directed by Morton Gould, Arthur Fiedler, Fritz Reiner, and others. Here's the only way you can get this wonderful 12-inch record. Send a $1 bill and four Heinz soup labels to Best of 57, Box 57, Rockaway, New Jersey. I repeat, Best of 57, Box 57, Rockaway, New Jersey. Send for yours right away.
Supporting Mr. Price in The Pit and the Pendulum were Ellen Morgan, Jay Novello, Ben Wright, and John Hoyt. Listen. Listen again next week when we return with another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
America listens most to the CBS Radio Network.
I thought that was John Hoyt.
So John Hoyt? John Hoyt?
It Hoyt. It Hoyt to know it was John Hoyt. Hoyt me. He was in a lot of films, science fiction and creepy films in the 50s and into the 60s.
Oh.
Believe he was in it. Attack of the Puppet People. Attack of the Puppet People. There you go. A good one. As we celebrate Edgar Allan Poe, a great American author. And you brought up, Dave, I think it was last time we paid homage to Edgar Allan. He was actually an accomplished detective writer.
Yes.
Or maybe that was Mark that brought that to our attention.
Could have been. I remember what my thought was on Edgar Allan Poe. He might have been one of the first horror story writers that we had in America. But then I thought back to Washington Irving, who did more than just the Legend of Sleepy Hollow. But, yeah. So... And that goes back to what pre-Revolutionary War days. So the horror story, ghost stories have been around with us probably since we've been on this piece of the planet that we are. But actual ghost stories have been around, at least in written form, since Washington Irving. But
I could even picture prehistoric man or early man gathering around the fire, telling stories to creep each other out.
Yeah.
Why not? Or to show how brave they were in a scary world. Who knows?
But first, before we get to the exciting conclusion of this ghost story, a commercial for rocks. Yes. No. Yeah.
A commercial for rocks?
Yeah. They didn't have a lot of sponsors back in caveman days. So they had to, sponsored by rocks.
Well, is Ugg going to join us?
Not today. Ugg? No.
No. Our ghost stories are kicking around from us being the second cousins of some people over in a place called the UK with their Victorian ghost stories, and we carried them with us on the boat, on over.
Sure.
I didn't carry them. That wasn't my job.
Yeah, I wasn't on no boat. What are you doing? What are you talking about?
What
you talking about?
I waited for the submarine, but, we still carried them over.
Was it a yellow submarine by chance?
It might have been. Back before the color of yellow was discovered. Yeah, back then. Yeah.
Before yellow was discovered.
Gotcha. All right, I got to go. You guys have a great time. I got to put you out of here.
No, thanks. We'll stay here.
Yeah, do that. Okay, we'll be that way. I get it.
We'll see you on your show, sir.
Maybe. Yep. Some of us will.
Yep.
Some of us will.
Yep.
What the goony goo goo is that? Oh, my goodness. Nope. Makeup is not fun.
Well, Dave, you had some interesting information about our final feature of the night.
Yeah, our final feature of the night was actually... you pointed it out to me, and when I researched it, I found out that this was actually a recording that Bela Lugosi, he was not getting very many jobs. So he went in and recorded this piece of Poe, the Telltale Heart. And he gave it to his agent, said, spread this around and get me some work. So this is something that was never, ever copywritten. But it was put out there for producers and directors and things like that to try and get Bela Lugosi some work. And,
Dave, Bela did this because he was Poe.
He was Poe, yeah.
He was a Poe man.
He was a Poe man doing Poe work.
Yeah, and what I did is I took a little bit of music and put a little bit behind him to help enhance it just a bit.
That he did. I think you're going to enjoy this, folks, as we listen to Bela Lugosi with The Telltale Heart.
It is impossible to say how first the idea entered my brain. But once conceived, it haunted me day and night. Object? There was none. For I loved the old man. He had never wronged me. He had never given me insult. And for his money, I had no desire. I think it was his eye. Yes, that was it. One of his eyes resembled that of a vulture. I made up my mind to take the life of the old man, and thus rid myself of the eye forever. You should have seen how wisely I proceeded, with what caution and foresight I went to work, and every night about midnight, I turned the latch on his door and opened it. And when my head was well in the room, I undid the lantern cautiously, oh, so cautiously. I undid it just so much that a single thin ray fell upon the vulture eye. I found the eye always closed. And so, it was impossible to do the work. But it was not the old man who vexed me. It was his evil eye. I was never kinder to the old man than during the whole week before I killed him. This I did for 7 long nights, every night, just at midnight. And I found the eye always closed. Upon the 8th night, I was more than usually cautious in opening the door. A watch's minute hand moves more quickly than did mine. When I was about to open the lantern, my thumb slipped upon the tin fastening, and the old man sprang up in bed, crying out, "Who's there?" He had been trying to fancy them causeless. He had been saying to himself, "There's nothing but the wind in the chimney. It is only a mouse crossing the floor." But all in vain. Then there came to my ears a low, dull, quick sound such as a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I knew the sound well. It was the beating of the old man's heart. Meantime, the hellish tattoo of the heart increased. It grew quicker and quicker and louder every instant. The wise precautions I took for the concealment of the body. First of all, I dismembered the corpse. I then took up 3 planks from the flooring and deposited all between the scantling. I then replaced the walls so cleverly, so cunningly, that no human eye could detect anything wrong. Entered 3 men who introduced themselves as officers of the police. A shriek had been heard by a neighbor during the night, and they had been deputed to search the premises. I bade the gentlemen welcome. "The shriek," I said, "was my own in a dream. The old man, I mentioned, was absent in the country." The officers were satisfied. My manner had convinced them. But ere long, I felt getting pale, and I wished them gone. My head ached, and I fancied a ringing in my ear. That the noise was not within my ears. I gasped for breath, and yet the officers heard it not. Why would they not be gone? God, what could I do? Was it possible they heard? No, no! They heard. They suspected. They knew. They were making mockery of my horror.
victory. I admit the deed. Tear up the flesh. Tear.
Is the face of his hideous heart.
Very, very nice. Oh, I'll tell you what, you know, despite his very, very thick accent, I have not heard this portrayed quite as emotionally as this one.
I agree. And just playing it straight through the recording, there was a lot of digitizing in it and some background noise, and you could hear that when it sometimes just went straight to the music. But we did as much cleaning as we could and then added some music and sound effects. I think it didn't hurt it at all. But
on the contrary, Dave, you enhanced it.
Bela Lugosi.
Thank you.
The great Bela Lugosi. Amazing way to wrap up this wonderful evening of Edgar Allan Poe, Dale.
Yeah, and as Dave mentioned, there is more to come in the future. Oh, yes, there is. Gee, just your luck. Not enough time for another reading. Sorry, gang. I'm trying to weigh the heavy responsibilities laid upon me and the guilt that I feel.
Right. So, what's happening yet tomorrow night on Sunday?
Hey, I not even know what's going on tomorrow. I know what's going on next week, finally. It just came to me today, like out of the blue. It was awesome.
Yeah, tomorrow, like just before podcast time. Yeah.
Tomorrow night, we will hopefully have CW join us, much like we do right now, probably. I don't know.
Yes.
Is that you, lady?
Yeah, that's me. Absent without leave, AWOL.
Hey, you made it, though. Welcome.
I made it. And I have been listening, so I've been with you in spirit, if not in phone or device or whatever it is.
Well, listening in spirit is much in the spirit of Poe. How's that?
Yeah.
There you go.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. Happy Halloween.
Will you possibly be able to make it tomorrow night?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Yeah, you're getting Shatnerized tomorrow.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Oh.
Tomorrow night is a William Shatner version, and Paul Savino, of War of the Worlds from Kannada. Kannada? What's that place?
No. It's from Los Angeles.
Oh. Well, that's a county in or something.
Let me try to
fumble through that one. Nobody's buying it. All right.
No. Nice try.
That was a feeble
good
attempt
one.
At weaseling out of a bad situation. Anywho.
Good
yes.
One.
Yeah, that's tomorrow night at 6:30 Eastern, our Halloween weekend.
Our annual different War of the Worlds broadcast. Yep.
The 30th, the anniversary of the original Orson Welles broadcast.
Ooh.
Yep.
Orson is listening from the great beyond.
And then what's happening next Friday, Dale?
Oh, I don't know. All kinds of stuff. What do we have next weekend? How about maybe we should change those clocks again?
Hmm? Yeah,
drop your socks and grab your clocks. It's time to change your clocks next weekend. Depending on where you live, some people don't play that game. They're not in the
Yeah. Our teacher always said spring ahead, fall back. They never used that particular euphemism.
Yeah. Back in those days, they'd be kicking them out of school. Anywho, we'll see you guys tomorrow night, 6:30 Eastern, for our annual War of the Worlds.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her. She
when
hated.
Next we meet
yeah.
in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Just
what
a goat.
Can you dig it?
I can.
Perfect timing. And you made it just in time for the after party.
Hurrah, hurrah, hurrah. Hurrah, hurrah, hurrah. Wow.
Yeah, it was fun reading a dream within a dream. If we had more time, I was going to see if anybody else wanted to read one, but that's okay. We only had time for one, as it turned out.
Yes.
Oh. Well, I'm sorry. My Weird Al and William Shatner birthday greetings did take 3 minutes away from us, so, you know.
No. Those were very important 3 minutes. I would never have...
Oh, yeah.
Don't change that. No. That will not be scrubbed.
Mike May sent those to me. It was hilarious.
Those are amazing. Those are really well done.
William Shatner.
That guy sounded
Weird Al.
Shatner.
Yep. My wife's favorite was William Shatner doing it.
Of course. That would have been his favorite, too. Hopefully I can lure her in tomorrow night.
Yeah.
You know? That way...
I look forward to that, because William Shatner, I'm still looking for them, but he actually started his acting chops. He's Canadian. He was on Canadian radio dramas. That's where he started off before he came to U.S. And
yep.
And we do have a week of him doing different stories for Zero Hour. And we do have one coming up very soon. Matter of fact, let me look at the schedule here. See, I think I've got your show scheduled pretty soon coming up here. Let's see.
Oh, with James Tiptree.
Yes. Coming up on. Actually,
she related to Rob Petrie?
19th. No. But, so we're having a Houston Erie House Has a Problem weekend then. And we have the Skylab, Are You There? Is William Shatner, Crisis, A Blade of Grass, and Mysterious Traveler, The Planet Zevis. And then the full program radio drama by novella by James Tiptree Jr., on Sunday, the 19th of November. 19th. So
that's
a Saturday.
The calendar. That's the same.
Yeah.
You said it's a Sunday.
So we definitely need your views for that one, CW. So.
Okay.
Yes. Wait till you guys see the ad.
Okay.
Wait till you guys see the ad. I'm posting it now for tomorrow night.
Is it there? I gotta go see it. Let me see.
All right, hold on. It's going up to Erie House right now.
And Erie House.
Just popped in there. Let's put the link.
And reload. And not there yet. Okay. 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 Reload.
There we go.
Okay. Okay. Do 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 do. Reload.
Reload.
Where's the link?
There it is. Oh yeah. You sent that out. Yeah.
Oh, I did. Oh, okay.
You sent that to me. You showed it. You sent it to me. Yeah, on Messenger. Yeah,
some comments were filtered out. Why those dirty? I put my link in there.
You put your what?
My link. You know, link, secret gem.
You can look
there it is.
In there,
there it is. It
really?
Showed up.
Let me reload again.
Refresh that bad boy.
It's time again. No link. Let me see. Go here. Oh, okay. If you tap on the picture, it goes on the side. There's the link. Okay. Okay. I see how this thing works. Or doesn't.
Or doesn't. Discombobulated. Discombobulated contrivance.
Yep.
Yeah, I was feeling Gar the other day because I know exactly how he was feeling. I was just going through the store and thinking, perhaps there's a mask I can invest in. And all of a sudden, I practically run over a Christmas tree. So.
Yeah, that'll happen. I saw a cartoon. I'm not sure who put it on. Gar might even put it on there on Facebook. Where there's Santa Claus and a turkey and some kind of Halloween figure driving down the road, and the Santa Claus had run all the way over into the Halloween lane, and somebody says, "Get in your own lane," you know, for the December, November, October.
Good one. Yep, that's how it works. But I don't know. Why don't they have Valentine's Day in there right now? Jeez.
Yeah. Well, they're waiting for Thanksgiving to be over before they start Valentine's Day.
Oh, yes, of course. Don't want your turkey gobbler to interfere with your box of chocolates.
You don't want to confuse people by having them thinking about too many holidays ahead.
Yeah.
There we go.
Well, there you are.
On my page now. There we go. See, I'll make another one with Erie House on the screen. Have them say fire photon torpedoes or something.
Yeah, I like that. I like that one where showed the wife the one where we're in the sea view. She thought that was great, and then I showed her the one when we're in the Jupiter 2, she liked that even better. So I'm getting her into your ads as well, Dale.
Yep. Cool.
I enjoyed that one. Yeah, the Jupiter 2 was great.
Yeah, that one was great.
I'm hoping you like that one recent one from Frankenstein where he looks like he's looking on electronic stuff. Crank it up! We keep losing the W.
That one I did it. I liked it very much. That was great.
These are so much fun to make, man. I'll look at a picture and go, all right, how can I twist this into, like, our show here? It's fun.
And there's the one with Robbie and the B9 robot battling it out for Erie House.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what you could do. If you could get a snippet from the old NASA launch or the countdown in the control center, and on one of the monitors, where Houston, we have a problem, you can put all of our monikers on there, or rather the icons.
Yep.
Just brainstorming.
I like it.
Yeah, and the good old days where all the people in Mission Control had their ashtrays right next to their analog computer console, their pipes, and their smoking, trying to launch people in a Campbell soup can into space.
Yeah.
With their buzz cut hairs and their snow white little shirts with short sleeves and ties.
Oh my!
I still don't understand how they got anybody into space like that. I mean, I went to Florida on a vacation once and went to the Space Center there, and they have a mock-up of what it looked like when they were doing the first Mercury and Apollos. and you're seeing these things, these huge things.
I don't remember Mercury, but I remember, like, Dave, do you remember them like gathering you in a common area of your elementary school and wheeling out the TV? They had the old cable TVs.
Yes.
And I remember Gemini. I don't remember Mercury liftoffs, but I remember seeing Gemini liftoffs before Apollo.
The one I remember the most is the Apollo that they had trouble with and couldn't land on the moon and came back. And they had us all in the it was a kind of multi-purpose / cafeteria, and there was a stage there, too, so it was kind of a multi-purpose room. And I remember Walter Cronkite, they had it on CBS, and Walter Cronkite was there saying, and if we don't see it in the next 20 seconds, that may not make it at all. And everyone was quiet, and that the next 35 seconds seemed to take an hour. And then all of a sudden you saw the capsule breakthrough and come out. So yeah, that is one that definitely sticks with me.
Yep.
Because there was one TV for the whole school. For the whole school, there was just one TV then.
Yes.
I've seen the Ron Howard movie with Tom Hanks.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
That was pretty good. And just showing that they got themselves back home using a plastic bag, a sock, and duct tape. Oh, and a piece of cardboard.
Yep, a little spit. There you go.
Yeah.
We'll fix it. Chewing gum.
Yeah, chewing gum, yeah. Because the brilliant engineers that made the capsule and then the module that was landing on the moon didn't think, gee, maybe we should make everything interchangeable. Nah, let's just make a square thing and then a round thing.
Yeah.
Kind of like our smart devices right now, you know. Just put some duct tape on it and wrap it up in a piece of foil. There, you get the signal.
Well, that's why I don't use them. I refuse to have a machine that's smarter than me.
we had to get rid
of the toaster.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Don't laugh. Once your toaster starts talking back at you, it's time to take a hammer to it.
Yep.
I've seen all the Terminator movies.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that to my toaster. You know, I wouldn't do that to my toaster. I'm sorry. Couldn't do it. I mean,
perhaps the waffle iron?
Maybe a waffle iron, but, you know, yeah, not a hammer. Waffle iron's jealous of the toaster anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, that'd be an easy do. That would be an easy do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and I don't know if you've ever been to Best Buy, and if your wireless device is on and picking up Wi-Fi, you will find that there are refrigerators now, of course. It's been a while, and it's getting more and more and more. Refrigerators have Bluetooth hookups wireless connection. Yeah. I was picking up something because I wanted to get some free Wi-Fi, as usual. And all of a sudden...
and then the refrigerator light came on.
Yeah. And then, so I'm thinking, isn't this the brand name of a refrigerator that I'm getting for some reason? And in the logos... on my Wi-Fi, you know, I'm picking up, you know, people are so rude, they lock their Wi-Fi. Nowadays,
nerve.
I don't know why. The nerve. I mean, absolutely. Some people. But anywho, I think I either got a Frigidaire? And anyway, I'm thinking, I've got a Frigidaire and it's giving me Wi-Fi. Okay. As long as I don't get freezer burn, who cares?
That's right. Yeah. You know, you got to be careful of the freezer burn when you're getting your Wi-Fi off your refrigerator.
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah.
Beware of freezer burn.
It's probably the fine print. Probably the fine print manual, yes.
Wi-Fi freezer burn is by far the worst.
Oh,
yeah, I'm telling you.
Ouch. Yeah, it takes a while to recover from that. Yeah. I haven't seen any ovens yet with Wi-Fi, but I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful sometime in the near future.
There you go.
That's a conversation I didn't expect tonight. That's cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, my pleasure.
You never know what to expect on Erie House.
Never know what to expect. So just remember, if your vacuum is getting a strange signal, I may be passing through your neighborhood trying to get some Wi-Fi. One never knows.
There you go. It could be CW, gang.
Yeah. You see, hey, the vacuum turned on. What the heck happened? Stop it. And why is it broadcasting Erie House Radio? I don't understand.
Yeah. That's awesome.
See, that's when toasters are good, when they have Wi-Fi and can pick up Erie House.
Because pirates have good taste.
Yeah.
That's right. That's why I can never personally punish my toaster, you know. Because toasters, but you know, but if the waffle iron is going to do it, you know, what can I say? It's jealous. So.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm not taking no guff from the waffle iron.
I'm not having that.
That's right.
No. Not having it. I may take it from the toaster, but the waffle iron, I'll give it what for.
Because then it starts to turn into mutiny at that point, and, you know, just.
This is mutiny, Mr. Christian.
If you let the toaster get away with stuff, then the blender starts getting cocky. You know, you just got to keep them in line. Yeah.
And then, you know, then the rice cooker goes berserk, and before you know it, the microwave starts coming.
Oh, don't get me started with the microwave.
Oh, yeah. Don't do that.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's hard to know what to trust anyway. I mean, your smart monitor for your, aka the television, may be spying on you.
You gotta watch a lot of black and white movies on mine. If they're young, I'll just bore them away. They'll go away. Oh God, I can't watch anymore. He's watching Universal movies. I can't take no more.
He's watching Metropolis for the 87th time. It's
hard to watch silent films. I don't know if I could watch that 87 times. Forrest J. Ackerman could. That was, I think, one of his first and favorite films of all time.
It was. That was his all-time favorite number one film. He adored that film. I can see why. I mean, I've seen a cleaned-up version of it. It's online. There's even a better version.
Yeah, it's very good.
There's even a better version that was put back together, but you have to pay for that. Somehow they got that where they've copywritten it for a while at least. But the original versions, there's other versions that are free. They've been very nicely cleaned up.
Oh, it's a classic film.
Yeah.
And the effects were, I think, rather impressive, especially for the day.
Well, that's where George Lucas got the idea to do C-3PO. I mean, Anthony Daniels, with all due respect to Anthony Daniels, he was not the first person encased in that metal contrivance. The actress that played the bot.
Ultima Futura, yeah.
Yeah, she was in there. That's where they got the idea for a C-3PO.
No kidding. Who knew? CW
who
knew that too.
I did. I knew. That's who. Uh-huh. But, Yeah, George Lucas borrowed a lot from other sci-fi writers. The spice mines that were mentioned in the first Star Wars movie, A New Hope, he got the spice mines from Frank Herbert's Dune. The word Jedi is a derivative of the word Jeddak from the John Carter of Mars series. So,
why did that John Carter movie bomb so terribly?
There are a lot of reasons. First of all, the it wasn't very well adapted from the books to the film. They didn't have enough publicity about it. They did their publicity. They didn't do enough push farther out. They did it closer to when the movie was filmed. There were a lot of issues with that. And I've seen it. It's not bad, but I haven't read all of the books. I read the first book, and they just could have done a better job of it. It was off. That's the best definition I can give you. It was just kind of off.
Okay. I was just curious.
Yeah. I mean, the books, the first book, A Princess of Mars,
I haven't read those in like decades. John Carter stuff. Been a long time.
Yeah, I only read the first two or three. I wasn't going to go through the whole series. I think there are about 11 books in the whole series.
Criminy. That could have got me off of dying too a little bit. It's like, yeah, I can't invest that much time.
Yeah, I think they're all, I don't know, he still has his estate going, but you can probably find them online where you can just listen to them on an audiobook or something. But
check that out.
Yeah. But, yeah, the books were not bad. But, yeah, that movie was... It was just kind of off. I could see, you know, they incorporated the characters, but a lot of things were missing. And the stupid way that they explained how he got from Earth to Mars, it was more akin to, what is that movie? That Stargate, that's it. It sounded like, wait a minute. You're almost borrowing from the premise of Stargate, that he went through a Stargate. That's not how he got from Earth to Mars and back. The writer, Edgar Rice Burroughs, he left it something as a muddled mystery, could never really explain it. Also, so that kind of put the kibosh on it. It really mucked it up. So there's in my review of a movie that should have done better but didn't.
Yeah. That's a great take.
Thank you. Which is a shame.
Again,
but there are a lot of. Yeah.
I'm sickened. There were, where were the cool young ladies who liked horror and sci-fi when I was young? You couldn't find two of them.
And they were out there. They were just too intimidated at the time. Most of them, not all of them, but most of them were too intimidated to come out because, like I said, a lot of older brothers found their comic book collection was kind of out of place because their sisters probably went rifling through there to look through their comic books. Or, you know, they were there.
Well. They were hiding from me. Probably smart thing to do. Probably for good reason.
So, what, a lot of older brothers went gunning for you? Okay, hey man, my sister said, you know, dude.
Yep.
There just weren't that many of the fairer gender in our schools or nothing. Maybe you're right. Maybe they were intimidated because it was at one point, a male-dominated hobby. But
why most of the, not all, but most of the female writers took, as James Tiptree Jr.
Yep.
took a male ID to get their stuff out there. Not all of them, thankfully. You had Ursula K. Le Guin. He got into I think, a big kind of a insult war with, Robert Heinlein.
Ooh.
Who, yeah. Robert Heinlein wrote the book Friday and was kind of sort of, from what I've heard and read, was sort of a kick in the pants to her.
Really?
Yeah. So, I don't know. Yeah. Well, that was Robert Heinlein. I mean, Starship Troopers is exactly, it's a good movie, but it's exactly how he felt. Everybody should be Americana. Communism is the danger. If you got to serve the military to become a citizen, just like in Starship Troopers, military service guarantees citizenship. Well, skip you, Heinlein. Very good writer, but yeah, he has some issues. Maybe that was why he was married how many different times?
You don't feel too strongly about this, do you?
I'm pretty mellow about it.
That's cool.
Yeah. But yeah, Ursula K. Le Guin, Andrea Norton. So there are women out there. And also remember the Forrest J. Ackerman's wife. I mean,
yes.
She was in the sci-fi. And there were other women out there. They were just sort of pushed into the background. Us females have learned that all one needs to do is have a aluminum Louisville Slugger at the ready.
There you go.
A la Harley Quinn, and say, "Hey, Puddin, I'm here at this convention too. Whap. Oh, while you're down there on the floor, unconscious, did I drop something? See ya."
Wait a minute. Disclaimer time. Erie House Radio does not condone violence unless you can get away with it. Thank you.
This is the public service announcement of Erie House Radio.
That's right. It's been a public service announcement. Thank you for your patronage.
Oh, thank you very much. Gentlemen, with that, I must be away. I will be here on the morrow.
Cool.
Mr. William Shatner, do War of the Worlds. Full speed ahead, Mr. Sulu.
Good night. Mrs. Calamash.
Wherever you are. Goat scream, Mr. Cheddar.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say good night.
Good night.
God bless the ghost. What
for this
say, but
good night.
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for two to lose.
Happy birthday,
Dave.
Happy birthday,
Dave. Thanks, I feel older already.
Night.
You are.
Good
night, folks.
Good night.
And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Well,
everyone.